We need to plan for what is going to happen after the war in Ukraine ends. We also need to plan for what happens after the genocide in Gaza ends. And we might need to think about what happens when other conflicts might come to an end, because these, of course, are not the only ones we have in the world at present. I'm making this point for a very good reason. After World War II, we created a new world consensus. World War II had been cataclysmic for the world at large. We might think that the main theatre of war was in Europe, but remember, that war spread right around the world. The only continent that basically escaped its impact, at least in a physical sense, was America. But everywhere else was in some way impacted and lost lots of people. That then meant that we needed to create a new world settlement so that this might never happen again. And I stress the point that at the moment what this means is that we are not looking for a new settlement which just embraces the USA and Russia, although that would obviously be a good thing. What we're looking for is a new world order that embraces all those places that might be impacted by the current conflicts and those that are happening which are not in the headlines every day. The point is that when war ended in 1945, we were, in fact, ready for it. There had already been meetings to talk about setting up a new world financial order so that the depressions of the 1930s, which created the environment in which war could take place, could not recur. That new consensus did not happen by chance. It was based upon the work of British economist John Maynard Keynes, Lord Keynes as he was by then, and it was negotiated largely between Russia, France, the UK and the USA, and I have to admit that this of course would not now be an adequate basis, because the rest of the world needs representation. The old empires can no longer set the rules for the world. Everybody must now be permitted to take a part. But the consequence of that thinking was that we did get new international structures. The World Bank and the International Monetary Fund were the consequence. At the same time, there was a new political consensus, and the United Nations was the symbol of that. We also got a World Trade Organization and the International Labour Organization. Standards were being set to make sure that people could be protected from harm. The consequence of war ending was that there was a desire for the increase in well-being of everyone. The aim was to deliver economic justice for the world. Now, I'm not pretending that the outcomes were perfect, because clearly they weren't. Human beings do not create perfect outcomes, as a matter of fact. But that doesn't mean that the compromises that were made were not worth making at that time, and some of them might still be worth making now. These deals did make it clear that it is possible for us to create, by agreement, better outcomes for the world at large. What we now have to do is rise to the challenge of doing that for the benefit of everyone, with every nation being involved in the negotiation of the process. But that means that we need to have some type of agreement on what objectives we're trying to fulfill by undertaking this process. And my worry, and the core issue that I'm trying to draw out by making this video, is that we have not done the thinking about what that new consensus might be. We have no international agreements about how we regulate markets. We have no international agreements about how we should respect the rights of labour. We need agreements about how we'd respect the rights of the planet, but at present, we're not enforcing them, as we well know. So what we need to do is new thinking. And an example of this can in fact be found in the UK. In 1945, Britain was ready for something new. The politics of the 1930s were abandoned. The troops who came back from war rejected that consensus and said never again were they going to work in the way they had to in the 1930s, where so many were impoverished and so many lived in fear. Instead, society embraced the ideas of William Beveridge, who, alongside Law Keynes, basically created what has commonly been called the post-war consensus. That created all the underpinnings of the welfare state, an old age pension that was worth living on, a welfare state that protected people if they could not work because they were too sick or had been injured or were simply unemployed through no fault of their own, a national health service, a national education service that meant that everybody could get access to a fair education so they had the skills they needed, not just for work, but also to participate in society. These things were treated as universal rights, and they delivered. We built a prosperity that was previously unknown as a consequence of embracing these ideas. Ideas can transform societies. If you want proof, that era is where the proof is to be found. But many of those things are now just distant memories. They've gone. But they were the foundations for the prosperity of the boomer generation of which I am a part. And they laid the foundations for the prosperity that my parents in particular benefited from in a way that I suspect they could never have imagined when they were growing up in the 1930s and during the Second World War. So there was a real outcome from this thinking, which went on amongst a few individuals, but which nonetheless had massive national and international consequences. And there were further international consequences as well. Let me be clear. We got an international criminal court, and we're going to need it again. There are people who need to be held to account for what is happening in the world now. And we did peacekeeping, and we need to think about how that can be done again. Can the United Nations be transformed into the genuine peacekeeping force that the world now needs? You can't deliver peace unless you have the means to enforce it. But that then means we need to ask questions about things like the Security Council of the United Nations. Why is that dominated by the countries who were the main antagonists inside the Second World War? Or rather, the antagonists who won, because of course Germany is not represented, and yet it is now a major political economy. We also need to think about whether some of those structures that were created by those major economies post the Second World War are still appropriate. For example, the OECD, that is the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which is the rich country's member organization, which is based in Paris, sets the rules for world taxation. And there is some serious dispute about whether they are the right people to now do that, or whether developing countries are prejudiced as a result. These are big questions that need to be answered. And at this moment, there isn't clarity about who is doing the thinking to find those answers. And that is what worries me. There isn't an investment in the process which took place during the course of the Second World War, in the UK in particular, but also in the USA, to create this idea of consensus about which we could rebuild. And we do need to rebuild. The war in Ukraine has been intensely destructive of that place, but also of international relations. The genocide that is taking place in Gaza is also massively realigning sentiment around what should happen in the Middle East. Not on an anti-Semitic line, because that's absurd, but because there is clear abuse taking place by a state of people who they claim are living within their own state in a way that is ethically unacceptable. And that means we need to have new political economic thinking about how we solve these problems. And that thinking can't just now be in the back rooms of universities. It has to be in the forefront of public debate. And this matters, because unless we do this, we can't build the world we want. And my suggestion is that the world we want should be built on something other than that which we've prioritized to date. We have prioritized the growth in material well-being. And post-1945, I'm not disputing that that was appropriate, because Clearly, we had lived through an era of intense poverty before the Second World War broke out, and nobody wanted to go back there again, and there is no reason why anybody should go back there again. But now, we have built the capacity to meet everyone's needs in the world. We may not be able to meet everyone's wants, but we have built the capacity to meet everyone's needs. But the consequence is not necessarily beneficial. We have an unfair allocation of resources within the world. And what we need to do is rebalance our allocation of resources, and to do so on the basis of our capacity to care. The foundation, I suggest, of the new consensus that we need is to be found in that one word, care. We must say that in this world we're going to create after conflict, we will care for everyone to the point that there will not be reason for people to enter into conflict again. That, to me, should be the epicenter of our thinking. The thing that we must focus upon to ensure that we get matters right to prevent future conflict. We need to, therefore, increase our international harmony around this issue. We know that this means that we will have to challenge some of the major strands of thought that are currently occurring inside international political economy, and in particular, the rise of the far right, which has a fundamentally different approach to issues because it builds its ideas all on the basis of division and of inequality. So we have to take on that challenge. We have to take on the challenge that is created by conflict, and we have to take on the challenge of thinking about the fact that something better is possible because we've done it before. None of this will be easy. Thinking isn't easy. In fact, by definition, it's hard because you're trying to do things that have not been achieved before now. But unless we take on that hard task, we will not have a better world. And that is something that I am desperate to see during the course of my lifetime.